Coming to you live from the middle of a wormhole somewhere in space or out of space. It's this week's apocalypse. I am your co-host, Kevin Lenihan. With me, as always, hurtling through the ether, is John Ferris. John, how are you doing today? Stop doing that with your face.
That's how I imagine it sounds, hurtling through a wormhole.
Indeed, yes, if we were actually flying through a wormhole, yes. Reality whipping by or possibly through. I'm not really sure. Portals are nebulous at best. Are there real ones? Have they? I mean, I know Stephen Hawking wrote that whole book about wormholes and white holes and black holes and the other end of a black hole.
I'm kind of the mindset,
if
he wrote a book about it, then it's probably real.
It's probably relatively plausible, at least.
Because anything I've read of his is like, oh, that's really interesting. And then they always get to a bit where it's like, right, I need to maybe take a while to like try and break this apart so that it's dumb enough that it can fit in my brain.
Yeah, and maybe he's already done that to the extent that he can, which makes us extra dumb.
Yeah, he tries to dumb it down. He's like, Stephen, you're going to have to dumb this down even further. I don't think you realise who you're dealing with here.
Exactly, it's going to be a problem. So, John, help, we're trapped, we're flying. Who knows what we're going to come out to at the other end of this portal?
Yep.
I don't know what's usually at the other end of a portal. It's not always something
could be
good.
Anything.
In the video game Portal, it was usually momentum. But as far as movies go, John, which is our only resource for information, as you well know, I'm not really sure what that could mean. So our technology still seems to work here. You know, this stuff is flying around everywhere. So there's a Blu-ray player and an old sort of CRT TV just sort of orbiting us right now as we fly through the nothing space, and a bunch of DVDs. Nice. And if I just reach out and grab one here, funnily enough, this seems to be about this exact scenario. So this first movie here is Parallel from 2018, directed by one Isaac Esban. The log line for that: a group of friends stumble upon a mirror that serves as a portal to a multiverse, in inverted commas, but soon discover that importing knowledge from the other side in order to better their lives brings increasingly dangerous consequences. Ooh. No, that doesn't bode well.
No.
All right.
The tagline for this one apparently is you can't go back.
I see that now on the box. Yes, which you can't go back.
Which kind of feels like, just to get ahead of ourselves here, kind of feels like that when you start watching this.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's enough of that, because I'm just randomly reaching out here and grabbing DVDs, so you can't have, it's the idea
you
that
can't
you've
have seen
this. You can't have seen it
here,
because it
you don't know
exist.
The nature of wormholes. Maybe I can see into the future in a
that's
wormhole.
True, actually. I don't know how time behaves in here, but perhaps we will get that knowledge from, yoink, Stargate! From 1994, directed by one Roland Emmerich. And the logline for Stargate: an interstellar teleportation device found in Egypt leads to a planet with humans resembling ancient Egyptians who worship the god Ra. Ooh. Yeah. I know. And, well, because we always do three, we got to have another one. So, yoink. Okay. This is Absentia from 2011. These are from all across the time stream, John. Directed by Mike Flanagan, who has done some films and TV shows that I have quite enjoyed. The log line for that, I'd just like to get that out of the way up front. A woman and her sister begin to link a mysterious tunnel to a series of disappearances, including that of her own husband. Ooh. Very spooky.
Yep.
All right, well, let's float here then for a while and watch all of these movies. Hopefully we won't get to the other end of the portal before we get through and glean the knowledge we need. All right, ha! All right, well, that was an experience.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Do you mean the movie or do you mean the wormhole? It seems to be going on forever.
The wormhole does go on forever, but it's a nice sort of... It's got a nice sort of purplish, bluish, technicolor glow to it, and as it whips by. It's a lot like the one from... Star Trek Deep Space Nine? That had a cool wormhole in it, right next to the space station. Or Event Horizon, that they made a wormhole. We never really got to see the inside of the wormhole in Event Horizon, though, did we?
I don't think so.
I wish we were talking about Event Horizon, John, and not the movie Parallel. Burley, I don't know if you could even really call it. I mean, yeah, I guess it is a movie.
It is in the sense that it is an hour and 45 minutes long, roughly. And
it's so long and nothing happens, John.
Yeah.
It is absolute... I usually would sit and say, here, John, what did you think? But I just want to fucking get this out of the way now.
It answers the question... What would happen if the four most boring and awful people in the world found an interdimensional gateway to a multiverse?
Yep. You know what this film is, John? They had one idea in this film.
Yeah.
There is one special effects shot in this movie that is great. And as soon as I saw it, and it comes right at the end, as soon as I saw it, I realized somebody came up with an idea for this special effects shot. Wanted to do it, and then had to gin up a movie to put it in. Because this movie is just a meandering mess of unconnected crap.
Yep.
It's like watching a sketch show, but like not a comedy sketch show.
Yeah.
And there's a point where they try to be funny, and it made me really want to turn it off. I really wanted to turn it off. There's a part where they are both... There's two characters who are doing an impression of Don Corleone, and they're going to blow up $1 million for no reason, and it doesn't make any sense, and it was horrible, and I wanted to turn it off, but I kept it on because I knew we had to talk about the film.
Yeah.
It's the only reason I got through it. In any other scenario, I would have stopped watching this almost immediately.
It's like the first 10 or 15 minutes are... kind of promising, where you like go, okay, I'm on board.
The characters are terrible, but you're like, oh, maybe they'll all get their comeuppance, and they kind of do, sort of, but not really.
No. And it's one of those ones where you're, or at least I was, I kind of, from the way you're talking about it, I assume you were the same, I was constantly checking my watch to see how much time has passed and how much time I had left.
I believe there was, I didn't do it constantly. I did it once. And it was 45 minutes in, and I nearly broke.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't believe it was not even half done. I was so mad. This film is terrible. This film has nothing to recommend it at all. The story is the story takes place in the last 5 minutes.
And even it's a dumbed down version of, kind of at the very start, you kind of go, okay, and like they find this portal that leads them to a multiverse, essentially, and you kind of go, okay, I wonder where they're going to take the actual story, because that's just like a MacGuffin, that's something to tell something, but they just go off, and like one of them instantly becomes a sociopath, seemingly, and then they just start getting into this thing where he's getting like weird technology that doesn't exist in their world, which kind of was like, okay, but what is the point in this? Like, what?
It didn't mean anything. It's so that they could have people be killed by it in the last 5 minutes.
And it's...
That's it.
It's so infuriating because... Yeah. And then all the things that he's doing where, like, you kind of think that, oh, he's fucking over, like, different versions of himself, who also, if they find this mirror in the house, by the way, it's so fucking stupid that the house isn't that big that a room that size would not be found by someone.
No.
It is massive. It's the entire attic. Yeah. And they,
it's the whole room. It's like, oh my god, a secret room. It's literally the entire top floor of the house.
With a window. Like, so you have all these like people who came in after the old woman who disappeared, and they never thought to check.
They never thought to look upstairs. Yeah, this film's fucking terrible.
And the window's pretty clean, so that someone has been up cleaning the window as well.
Yeah, the set dressing in this is not thought of at all. There's very little. Like, as I say, I genuinely think they had one idea for a special effects shot, And I don't really care about spoilers.
Spoil away, because this is fucking awful.
You shouldn't watch this piece of crap. It's literally, the mirror is the portal. Yeah. So you go through the mirror, but it has like, depending on what angle
depending on what angle you have it in.
It's like a switch. It's like a piece of technology someone has made or something, but they never get into any of that. It's just there, and it has a thing on the side, and you turn it. So basically, whenever you turn it, it switches to different dimensions, or it turns off. I'm not sure. But either way, as soon as I saw that, I thought, someone's going to be halfway through this mirror at some point, and it's going to switch, and they're going to get cut in half.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't expect them to quite get cut in half. The direction they got cut in half, it was the best/worst direction to be cut in half, maybe. I don't know. But they have a scene basically where someone is halfway through the mirror and it switches, and then the entire front half of their body sort of slurps down into the room. And that was great. That was literally just like the only part of the film that felt worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it became apparent to me. It was like, oh, somebody wanted to do that special effect shot and they didn't.
It's kind of, it's one reason. Of those ones though, it's too little too late. Movie, it's you have already destroyed any goodwill that I might have had for you.
Yeah, the acting is universally awful.
Yeah,
The dialogue is just devoid of any inspiration whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's not worth watching. It's terrible, and I feel like we've already talked about it too long.
But even like, well, I've still I want to unload myself with the baggage of having watched this. And like, even the direction and the camera work is terrible as well.
It's like somebody really wanted, it's like somebody was like halfway through making the film and then they watched 12 Monkeys and they thought, oh, it's good. You could turn a camera while you're walking around. So
Dutch angles for no reason. Like, it's literally them having a meeting about something, like their weird business or something. And there's like these really awkward Dutch angles put in for no reason, and then the camera moves wildly when it doesn't need to. You know,
there's a part where it literally spun all the way upside down.
It's nauseating.
And then there was a cut, and then I was like, "What's the significance of this picture of this tree? Is it supposed to mean something?"
Yeah.
Oh no, it's not a tattoo on a girl's back. Why not?
And then like unnecessarily close-ups, where you're just going. Right, what story is the camera work and the direction trying to tell us here? None. It's just like
I don't know what I'm doing. It's what the story the story. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm just gonna try everything, with no fucking motivation whatsoever. Like, so it was
Cheesy overuse of like any time there's a mirror, you can bet that camera is going right up to that mirror. It's like, do you get it yet? It's called parallel.
It's parallel, cause parallel dimensions also, but what's the point?
And like, there's certain things that kind of initially when it happened, I was like, okay, that's a good idea. Like the different color palette when they're in a different dimension, but I think it would have worked better had there only been two. Had it been, your alpha dimension and your beta dimension, but the fact that every time you go into the mirror, it's a different dimension.
It's completely different.
It lessens the effect, and it also makes things a bit muddier and a bit it just makes it a lot stupider. Like the amount of conveniences in this movie to make their burly held together plot work. You know, the fact that when you go into that other dimension, time moves slower for some reason. So when you come back, like, it's only a couple of seconds, so you can do all this other shit. Yes.
And like the whole thing about, you know what it actually smacked me of? There's this whole thing where they're like app developers, which is like the most uninteresting thing, really.
Yeah.
We're trying to make an app for parking, of all things. And like, that's this big sort of linchpin to the beginning of the film. And you know, I don't care. And like, they're kind of doing this thing where, you know what I thought? I was 15 minutes in and a sentence popped into my head and it was, oh, this is primer for people with head injuries. This is primer for someone who is an idiot.
Yeah.
This is primer, but primer didn't talk. The whole great thing about primer was, it was about time travel.
Yeah.
But, and it explores some of the same ideas. that this film does, in as much as this film explores ideas. But Primer never spoke down to its audience.
No.
Primer was smart and was like, I hope you're paying attention,
yeah,
because we're going to keep moving.
Yeah. Primer, if you were confused, it was, you've missed a piece of information, or maybe you were meant to be and something gets revealed, yeah, later that catches you up.
Yeah.
This, you're confused because nothing fucking makes sense and it's fucking dumb.
No, this is a bad film. It's really badly written. It's terribly directed. Yeah. Like, it's directed by somebody who just wants to do everything all the time.
It's like,
and then nothing for long stretches.
Yeah, all the pacing is god awful. It actually feels like it was written like some kind of, like a 14-year-old who has ADHD on a sugar rush or something, or a sugar, yeah, crash, actually.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, it feels like a series of sketches. But usually when you say sketch, you're talking about a comedy show.
Yeah.
But it's not a comedy show. Just imagine sketches that don't have a punchline at the end. And there is no joke.
That make you cringe internally so much that,
yeah,
you feel like you're having heart palpitations.
Yeah, that's this film. A series of bad, quote-unquote, dramatic sketches with a really good special effect right at the end. And nothing else to recommend it whatsoever. John, would you say that, like, I guess he was a time traveler in Quantum Leap, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't really jump now. But things were different, right, whenever he was leaping around?
I mean, Are you trying to say he was a portal man?
I would love to have talked about Quantum Leap instead of Parallel. Yes,
yeah.
I think so. Yeah. But we have to talk about Stargate now.
That's fine.
Directed by one Roland Emmerich. And I'm just going to say probably his best film, lads.
I would probably agree with you. And I would also say it is a Roland Emmerich-ass Roland Emmerich
movie. It is quite a Roland. It's missing some of the elements of it that became the Roland Emmerich,
yeah,
movie, but it has a lot of that stuff. So let's just go over the log line real quick.
Yep.
An interstellar teleportation device found in Egypt leads to a planet with humans resembling ancient Egyptians who worship the god Ra. John, what did you think of Stargate?
Well, I'm going to preface this with, I'm not going to say that Stargate's a good movie. It probably isn't, but I enjoy the hell out of Stargate.
Yes, I think the fact that the other movies that we watch on this list are the movies that they are boosts Stargate a little bit.
Yeah.
But also, it is kind of fun, and yeah, it is absolutely that Roland Emmerich archetype of angry army guy, and then nerdy science guy that no one believes or ever listens to, and it's every fucking one of his
and like
films.
Literally comes in day and one and he's like
at them
correcting everyone's work that have been at it for 3 years,
which Jeff Goldblum does when he gets to like the White House in Independence Day. It's what fucking, I was going to say Randy Quaid there, but Dennis Quaid does in The Day After Tomorrow when he gets to the White House.
Yep.
God, who else? Who else, John? Who?
Yeah, they're just missing the White House in this. He goes to like a secret underground bunker, so...
Yeah, there's no White House in this movie, so...
And like that whole...
Cheyenne Mountain, is it?
That whole scene with James Spader, like, explaining things to the angry military men who just, like, are looking at him with disgust, and he's being all like, ooh, like, pulling out these maps and, like, being so
like,
awkward
speak
and,
speak English, nerd, basically.
Mr. Scientist.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, yeah, this is... You know what? Looking at the list of Roland Emmerich films... I'm going to say, pretty solidly, this is his best film.
Yeah.
Universal Soldier, maybe. I don't know. It's been a while since I watched Universal Soldier. That is one of his.
Yeah.
So that might be a better film than Stargate, but this is definitely better than Godzilla. This is definitely, which, disgraceful. As a fan of the Godzilla series in general... That film is special.
So you have to be careful saying that these days, because there's a lot. There's more guff than there is.
Okay, as a fan of is it a Toho? Toho's Godzilla, the company that produced them in Japan.
Yeah.
I like their movies. They did a really good one after that terrible mess of a one came out, that Roland Emmerich one. Mm-hmm. They were disgusted and they were like, nah, never again. But then they did do it again with that the Kick-Ass guy and Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
They did a movie with him anyway. But they did one called Shin Godzilla, which means Godzilla Returns. And it was fucking excellent. And it was sort of, okay, these guys are making these movies, but we're doing the real ones over here. Yeah. Great. So that was fucking terrible. 2012 was Balls, in which mm-hmm. I believe our archetype from this, our James Spader science guy archetype, is played by John Cusack or his wife. I remember John Cusack's a limo driver, but he used to be like a fucking meteorologist or a geologist or something.
Probably. That, I can't really remember that movie. I just remember it being like, yep, that was a Roland Emmerich movie.
Yeah, and then Dennis Quaid is the guy no one believes in The Day After Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The Patriot is garbage. I don't know if it fits his archetype.
No.
Really, it's a weird one. But Godzilla does. The science guy in Godzilla is Matthew Broderick. And he is very believable as a science guy no one would believe. Let's see now. What else have we got here? I've never seen White House Down.
No.
That Moonfall, I believe Patrick Wilson is the science guy no one believes in Moonfall. And apparently they're doing another Stargate. Possibly a reboot, who knows? But anyway, John,
I think at this stage it would have to be.
Yeah,
I've heard that the series is good. I've never watched it really.
I did.
Oh, is it good?
I watched a lot of Stargate SG-1. No,
oh,
but I watched a lot of it. It's kind of like it has a lot in common with like the first season of Star Trek: The Next Generation,
okay.
As far as like tone. Goes,
yeah, but when it hadn't quite found its footing,
yeah,
it was like it had a few episodes where it was like, oh my god, that was genius, and then it goes, yeah, the next episode will be like, oh yeah,
yeah, it was quite spotty like that. But some of the characters that they ginned up for it were really good. They have this extra like guy called Teal'c, who's like this like guy that used to work for the bad guys, and is like now with the humans.
That's the guy who voices Kratos.
Is that the same guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, cool. That makes sense. He's really good. He's sort of like, if you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, he's kind of like, what do you call him? What do you call the big guy played by, I forgot all the names. You know the guy, the big guy. In the Guardians of the Galaxy. What's his name?
I don't remember his name either. Guy.
I've seen that film a load of times and played the whole video game. Anyway, he's like him, the Destroyer, something the Destroyer.
Drax? Yes, Drax.
Yes, he's basically Drax. You know, he's like, I do not understand what you're trying to say. He talks like that all the time in it, and he's very good.
The actor's called Christopher Judge, and I just had to check there. He definitely does the voice of Kratos in God of War.
Yeah, and MacGyver, the guy that played MacGyver, is in that show. He plays Kurt Russell, basically, in that show. And then some other random guy that sort of looks a bit like James Spader plays the James Spader character. But anyway, John, I'm going to say this. I quite enjoyed Stargate. It was kind of good.
Yeah.
It's fun and it is very stupid at times. Yeah. It's very like, it makes a lot of logical leaps. And James Spader becomes extremely fluent in a language very, 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 very quickly.
That's
like
the
in
bit
an
that
afternoon.
I enjoy the most. It's like he spends an evening with that girl and then he's all like, yep, got the language. He even makes like a throwaway line of like, oh, it's grand once you know the vowels or something like that.
Yeah, you're like, okay, yeah, sure, whatever. Wishy-washy crap.
That's how languages work, right?
Exactly, yes. If that's how languages work, John, then I should not have failed my GCSE French. So, I think this movie holds up in a way.
Yeah.
I like it. I think the special effects in it kind of look all right.
Yeah,
still.
Yeah.
It doesn't look bad in that way for a movie from, what year is this from? 1994. It looks pretty good.
Yeah,
is that the same
definitely.
Year Mortal Kombat movie came out? I think it is.
Mortal Kombat was 95.
Maybe you're right. I don't know.
I think that's right.
I don't know. But Stargate's kind of good. I think James Spader is great in this. He is fucking brilliant in this.
Well, I think the casting of this movie helps a lot because the dialogue is kind of shit. Mm. And in fact, I think both James Spader and Kurt Russell said no to the first draft.
Oh, yes.
And then James Spader, he's on record. There's literally an interview where he said, "I just did it because of the money." I was like, the end of the day, this is my job. And sometimes you just like, he likes to do stuff for the art. But occasionally you just have to like go, fuck it, I need to pay the bills this
sometimes
week.
You have to go to work, yeah. I guess.
And he's proud of the fact. It's just like, I'm a jobbing actor in that way, But they kind of lucked out in getting the cast that they did because they're too good for this movie.
They're way too good. Kurt Russell is great. Kurt Russell just inhabits that role really well. He's
and that bulletproof hair.
His bulletproof is Guile from Street Fighter hair that never, like, at the start he's wearing what I assume is a wig, with like his long flop hair. Like, I've really lost it. I've gone off the rails.
Yeah, I grew my hair.
Look how long and extremely well fucking manicured my hair is.
And he looks cool. It's like, the Kurt Russell we want.
Yeah, he does actually look kind of cool at the start. And then he shows up with his fucking flat top looking like the fucking Zool. He looks like Gozer at the end of Ghostbusters a wee bit. You're like, all right, fair enough. But it's Kurt Russell, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And it works. And he's like, I'm an angry military guy and I have nothing to live for. And I'm like, I believe you, Kurt Russell.
Yep.
And then James Spader is, I'm a nerdy science guy who no one likes and I'm socially not well adjusted because I'm bad at talking to people. But he does that really well. He takes a terrible script and makes it sound good.
Yeah.
Which is something that's like a gift of James Spader's. He has that gift because there's that show, The Blacklist, that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not well written. Very much, but every scene with James Spader is fucking electric.
Yeah.
He is so good. You watch it because he's in it and he's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
So he does that quite well. All the other sort of satellite characters are grand. French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun is one of the military guys.
And his like bravest roles.
Yeah.
His bravest role ever. He's the last person you really think of when you think military dude.
Yeah, like, I kept looking at him thinking, that guy kind of looks like French Stewart from Third Rock from the Sun, but it can't be him. And then he has, like, one line as he's going through the portal at the end, and I was like, oh no, that is him!
You know what's really weird? I was trying to, because my wife, I said to her, that's French Stewart, that's, what do you call him, from Third Rock from the Sun? She's going, no, it's not. The whole way through, until that scene that you're literally referencing, she went, oh, no, it definitely is.
Yeah, I think it's because in the entirety of Third Rock from the Sun, he had his eyebrows furrowed. Just his character just was always, like, holding his eyebrows together, like, and squinting. And he does that for a brief second while he's talking, and suddenly it's like, oh, that's him, yeah.
There you go. Little did you know how versatile French Stewart was.
I know. He's got range, apparently.
He can narrow his eyes. He can open them.
Yeah. And like Ra's pretty good in this as well. I like the villain.
Yeah.
He's very sort of like extremely aloof, I would say, in this way that's just like... And also he just seems like a creep.
Yeah.
Because he's just constantly surrounded by all these children.
And apparently they did that on purpose to make the audience feel uneasy, and it works very well, because you're like, oh, I don't like this guy, and this whole situation seems very weird.
Yeah, talking about fucking directorial intent, well done, Roland Emmerich, but why didn't you keep that up? Yeah, that's pretty good.
Played by the guy from... what do you call that movie?
It was in the Crying Game.
That's it.
Yeah. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
I didn't see him in a lot of stuff after this that I recall.
No. But I like the kind of almost androgynous looking as well, which kind of helps as well. It's like that David Bowie thing of, you know, alien who's androgynous.
You could be the man who fell to earth.
Exactly. But apparently he was really happy they did the voice modulation stuff because he hated his performance in this movie. Oh. And apparently he was crying whenever they showed it. Oh. And they're, I think it was Roland Emmerich or someone was like, oh, sorry. Like, they thought he was annoyed that, you know, they masked his voice in all this emulation. And it's like, no, you saved me. You see, like, he was so happy. Oh, but like, I don't know. Like, you can kind of, you know, see the performance through the modulation. I thought he did pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he was, that's what I'm saying. I think he's great.
Yeah.
I think he's really good as the villain.
And it's kind of cool to have, like, you know, you don't think of this, like, kind of androgynous thing as imposing until you kind of, it explores him more and you're going, okay, yeah, he's really powerful. He just doesn't look that imposing. Like, he's not a big...
Yeah, I think that's a real achievement to have somebody who isn't necessarily physically intimidating still come off as intimidating. I think he did a great job.
And I did find it hilarious that, like, every scene he's got a different costume.
He does, his costume changes are constant. Almost every time the camera cuts away and cuts back, he's got a different sort of...
It's like, I just imagine Ra, like, running into the back room. It's, oh, I need to get my war clothes on, and then it's like...
He's like Axl Rose in the middle of a Guns N' Roses concert here. They, like, play during the guitar solos, he runs off and fucking and comes back with a different pair of hot pants on. What the fuck?
Oh...
Yeah, so this movie is actually fun. Yeah. I think it holds up. It is, as I say, it could be Roland Emmerich's best movie. Yeah. It's not a high bar.
It's a dumb... Well, Roland Emmerich kind of trades in dumb movies. Yeah. Like the
dumb movies pretending they're really smart, like, when they're really
not. Take their liberties with science to an extreme, almost. But, like, I find with this movie, like, I kind of do fall off it towards the end a bit when it becomes, like, a fairly, you know, good... Like, there seems to be some more substance in it at in the first two-thirds.
Yeah.
And then the last third is literally just good guys against bad guys, just shooty. And it kind of, like, it loses me a little, but I'm still kind of on board because Kurt Russell's running about.
Indeed. Yeah, because the beginning of it is all about, like, well, the first third of it is them trying to figure out how the goddamn thing works, really.
Yeah.
They spend a lot of time getting there. And then the middle third, it's all about, like... It's weirdly all about the psychology of oppressed people.
Yeah.
And how people...
which
sort
they
of allow
do
them,
anything with.
Yeah, allow themselves to be oppressed. And it's kind of like, this is actually kind of interesting, the way these people behave and the way they are, like... skittish and scared of these outsiders because they think they've been sent by this, what is essentially the grand overseer of the mine.
Yeah.
You know, the theoretical, like, you know, living god or whatever. And it's like, it's very interesting to see that explored. And then, once we hit the revolution or whatever you want to call it, it's just everything's exploding.
And
we've got the weapons. There's a bomb with a literal ticking clock on it. Oh, no.
It's one of those things where, like, the revolution that, like, literally is dealt with in an afternoon.
Because
that's how revolutions go.
Yeah, they've got like three guns, so they're grand and they're going to win. All right, cool. Well done, guys. So, yeah, it's actually quite good. I would recommend Stargate for a fun, brainless evening with popcorn. It's a great popcorn movie.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's kind of fun. And it is like, it does, I think, which is Roland Emmerich's motivation, I think, is to trick you into thinking that you're smart when you're watching this film. They go, oh, I understand this. And it's like, yes, because it's not actually that complicated. But sometimes it is contradictory of itself.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever. That's fine. You know, it's not The Day After Tomorrow. The Day After Tomorrow was fucking terrible. It was a disgrace, almost. Like, I love that thing that you told me about NASA refused to put out a memo to say no one's allowed to comment on this movie if they ask, because this is not based in science whatsoever. That's brilliant. That typifies Roland Emmerich for me. That's everything about what his sort of oeuvre became. That's his whole thing. It's just, science is my plaything, and I'm going to pretend that this... It's more like, it's like, I don't want to say pseudoscience, because that's a thing. It's like fantasy science, I guess.
Yeah.
But like extreme fantasy.
Movie like science.
Movie, extreme movie science. He's the king of movie science.
Yeah.
I'll say that. So it's fun. Kurt Russell's great. I always like to see James Spader in things.
Mm-hmm.
He's brilliant. I watched all of Boston Legal because James Spader was in it. Although it was all, it was actually all right. It was a lot better than The Blacklist. It had actually a really great ensemble cast. But Stargate's great. Universal Soldier might also be good.
Maybe.
I would like to find an excuse to watch that at some point.
Okay.
Just to see. But that's a conversation for another day.
Yeah.
At the minute, I would just say Stargate is fun, it's stupid, and Kurt Russell's cool as fuck.
I'll just leave it with, give my regards to King Tut, asshole. Oh, that's the kind of dialogue you get.
Yeah. Gosh, this is a Long Isle portal, isn't it?
Yep.
Kind of reminds me of that scene in Bill and Ted when they're Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey when they're falling down to hell. Yeah. And they're just like, whoa! And then they're just like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
Like 20 questions. It's like that. I've already started talking about a different film, John.
Yeah, see, everything in movies is always like, you know, they always like do this where anyone who's a doctor will be watching a movie about doctors or a series about them and go, that's not how things work.
Yeah.
Probably the same with portals. Everyone goes into portals in movies and come out instantaneously.
Yeah. I mean, not always. There was a bit of travel time in Stargate that we get to see. It seems to take like about like 5 to 10 seconds for them to get all the way through.
Yeah,
into Stargate.
Well, this is like well over 5 hours now.
Yeah. This is getting ridiculous. I'd like to see the manager, but I'm afraid of what the manager might be. So I maybe don't want to see the manager.
A portal Karn.
Indeed.
Don't want to be a portal Karn.
You don't want to be a portal Karn. Yeah, that's terrible. Because yeah, they probably don't look kindly on that here. So John, how about absentia then? Let's talk about that and while away the time till we get to the other dimension. Directed by one Mike Flanagan. I will just read the log line here. So a woman and her sister begin to link a mysterious tunnel to a series of disappearances, including that of her own husband. Now, John, what did you think of absentia?
I think it would have been all right if it was like a short movie.
Yeah,
I don't think there was enough. There wasn't enough material to make it a feature length.
Yeah, and it feels stretched beyond its beyond where it should be.
And I have a problem with Mike Flanagan's writing anyway, and I think this movie kind of made me realize what it is, and it's I kind of feel like he writes stories the way Grandpa Simpson tells stories, where he goes off on these like tangents that, if it was done better, would reveal something about a different character, or would give you a bit more color or something. But it's not. It's like Grandpa Simpson, like going, "Oh, we put an onion on our belt," which was the fashion at the time, and it's just like a random thing.
I reached into my pocket and took out two nickels,
which had birds on them or whatever.
Yeah, we used to call them chicken scratches.
But it seems like that kind of thing, or it just like repeats something that you already know. Like I felt that any time it was kind of going off on a tangent about these characters, I didn't learn anything more. It's like, I know the sister is a junkie who is now religious, and just showing me that again doesn't add anything to her character.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time like going like, oh, what, this box that she's hiding?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, clearly it's got her fix kit in it. Although, to be honest, I don't want to sound like some kind of wild drug addict here, but that box is way too big. Way too big.
Yeah.
Way too big. I've seen them. They sell them in head shops. They're little, small, like, they call them cigarette cases, but you know that they're for keeping drugs in.
Yeah.
They're wee small ones that you can fit in your pocket. It's not a big wooden fucking box that you have to, like, store under your bed. That is ridiculous. Well, now,
She has to put her rosary beads in it as well.
That's true, because she has to pray, and maybe her Bible's in there too. I don't
know. She actually uses the rosary beads, like, you know, as her tie around the arm.
Yeah. Now, I will say this about Mike Flanagan. I have liked a number of the things he's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did a really good film that anyone who's played the game Control. If you've played that, there's a thing in that that, to be honest, I think was inspired by one of his films. Yeah. He did a film called Oculus about a mirror. And it's this brother and sister, and there's this mirror in their old house that they go back to. I don't want to spoil it because I think it's really, really good. It's got Karen Gillan in it.
Yeah.
Doing a pretty flawless American accent, actually. She's pretty good at that. Even though I believe... Is she Scottish?
She is, yeah.
Yeah, she's Scottish, right. But it's got Karen Gillan in it, and it's really good. It's really good.
Okay.
It has a mirror in it.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah. It has a mirror in it that is like something... there is a mirror in the game Control, but it's not quite like that mirror, but it's like absolutely like a cursed, like one of the objects from Control, this mirror. And it's really good.
Yeah.
It's way better than I was expecting. I first like just watched it just because it was there on like Amazon Prime or something and was shocked at how much I liked it.
Yeah.
He did another film called Hush, which I quite liked. It was all right. It's very much one of those home invasion type movies, but it's got a wee extra twist on it, which makes it kind of okay. But yeah,
you say twist. I don't know. To me, it was it just seemed kind of I don't know. I really didn't like it. It seemed like a gimmick more.
Yeah.
She's deaf. Ooh. Yeah.
But I think the best achievement he has done, not necessarily the best thing he's done, but the best, like, recovering something has done, is he did a sequel to the Ouija movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know the Ouija movie about Ouija boards that was actually, like, a Hasbro production?
Yeah.
It was just called Ouija. There was a sequel to that called Ouija Origin of Evil that is... great.
Okay. I don't know what ones I've seen or what.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen it.
This one is about a family. It's a woman and her two daughters, and she's a quote unquote medium,
right.
But like they fake it because like all mediums do. You know, it's a show.
Yeah.
Really. But like her daughters help her with all like the fake props. They're like hiding in the walls, shaking the tables and stuff whenever like the groups are in and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
But then they have like this, obviously they come across the real Ouija board. So I don't know if you've seen that one. That's what that one's about. They accidentally actually contact a spirit or whatever.
I know, it was probably the original one then that me and my wife seen. And yeah, I think that was the one that we were betting on who was going to do like various housework on how it was going to... like what was going to happen next, and it was just kind of funny because everything was so predictable.
You were betting different chores around your house on what was going to happen.
Yeah, it's like because it was like okay, either this or this will happen. You know, both were fairly like you know every horror movie in the world. This like it'll be one of these two things. So that was the only kind of enjoyment we got out of it, making it our own. It's like, yeah, I don't have to do your dishes tomorrow.
Yeah, oh, nice. Well, that's pretty good. So, Ouija Origin of Evil is worth watching.
Okay.
I think it's way, way better than the movie it's a sequel to.
Yeah.
Like, way better than the movie it's a sequel to. Gerald's Game's all right.
It was okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. It's all right.
It's very, again, one of those ones that, you know... It's kind of just above average. There's nothing really like it's not like massively noteworthy or anything, but it is kind of it's fine. It's
And his The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix I thought was very good. I liked that a lot. Mm. Did not like the second season at all.
Is it that Bly Manor?
He wasn't really involved with this. He only did one. He only did like I think maybe the first episode of it.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Again, I just found even with The Haunting of Hill House, I just didn't like. There was a lot of like, tangents into the melodrama parts that just to me felt kind of it just did not to me it always felt like it could have been shorter and a lot punchier and it would have been better. That's kind of what I find with a lot of his stuff. I fell off like Midnight Mass got rave reviews and I just fell off it because like this just feels like a waste of my time.
Until I really really liked Midnight Mass right up until the last episode, which I thought was awful. I thought the way they wrapped it up was absolutely terrible.
There was
a rush to put a bow on it. In a way,
I'm glad I didn't waste any more time on it then because I got to the stage where I remember something like a load of dead animals on a beach or something. I was like, going, it was really bad for
it's a bunch of fish wash up on the beach. Yeah, and birds. Yeah,
I felt it was really bad for the melodrama nonsense where I was just like, why the fuck do I care? Like, you know, I don't feel like I know these characters anymore through all these like tangents. It was just like, I'm not going to waste my time on it, but
okay.
And some people kept like going, oh, you should keep going till this is like, nah, I'll just watch something I like.
Yeah, you can't just say, oh, you have to push through to this.
You have to push through to the good bit. It's like, so I have to waste like 6 hours of my life.
You can't put all your good stuff at the end, and they don't in Midnight Mass. They put all the good stuff in like the final third of the season, and then the end of it's fucking just tanked.
Yeah, see, that's even worse then. It's just...
So there are a few things. I think Ouija Origin of Evil is good. I think Oculus is very, very good.
Yeah.
Oculus is really good to watch as like in your head. If you imagine this takes place in the same universe as Control, it's even better, probably. So much Mike Flanagan's career basically taken apart. He's doing the Fall of House of Usher next, and he seems a lot more involved in that one.
Yeah,
as this sort of like, you know, the Haunting of series.
Yeah,
it's gonna be the next one of that. So I'm interested to see that because I kind of like him. Absentia is the acting in it is mostly awful, except for Katie Parker, who's the main character who plays our sort of sister who's come to her. The person who's come to her sister's aid when her husband basically has been missing for 7 years and she's about to have to declare him officially dead even though he was never found.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole thing with like, oh, there's this tunnel that goes under basically the road nearby that weird things happen in. I think it's a really good premise.
I like the
idea of it for a short story or something.
Yeah. And the atmosphere is pretty good from like, you know, quite early on. I think it just goes back to it's too long for what...
It's way too long.
As you say, like, it makes a good short story or it makes a good short movie, but there's not enough happening. There's so much fluffing about in between
with, like... because the character who is whose husband was missing all this time... Trisha, she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And he's like, who's the father about? And it's really obviously there's this cop who was supposedly the cop who's investigating her husband's disappearance.
Yeah.
And it's really obviously his kid. It's so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Like they try to have that be like some kind of shocking reveal or something. You're like, nah, mate. And like their dialogue's all pretty bad, and their delivery's all pretty hollow, and it's not great. Doug Jones is in this fucking movie. Doug Jones, who plays the fish man in The Shape of Water, and played the scurry eyeball hand man and the goat man in Pan's Labyrinth, who's a brilliant physical performer.
Yeah.
And he's in so many things. He's in Hocus Pocus, actually, as well. He's the... zombie guy in Hocus Pocus, which I recently watched Hocus Pocus 2, and I will not talk about that. Suffice to say that it was absolute drivel, and was one of the cheapest looking shitty cash in productions I've ever seen.
But
I don't think Doug Jones. Someone is playing that same character in it, but I don't think it's Doug Jones.
Oh.
It looks all very similar, but they've done that with makeup, I think. Anyway, so Doug Jones is just this man who is. Appears briefly in this underpass tunnel, which again I like the concept because those places are scary. Those weird unlit under the road tunnels are like an intimidating place, and muggers do hang out in there and stuff, so they are at their base level kind of, I don't want to go through there. There's one near your house that I don't like.
That's right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's not as ridiculously. It's not.
No, it's very, very short. It'd be really funny to like do a remake of this movie using that.
It's like fucking 10 to 12 feet long or something. But no, this one's ludicrously long. I guess it's going under like a full American highway or something. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, so the idea is that like there is some kind of portal or something in this tunnel where this thing lives, and they lay on the metaphor of the troll under the bridge so thick. Like the Billy Goat's Gruff book. Yeah, that they have like just like hold it up to the camera basically.
Yep.
And be like, look. And then like,
this is what we're doing.
And then, because they know later he's going to pick it up. They didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Because later on in the film, he picks it up and looks at it. And they could have just done that and him say, it doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
You know, which is creepy when he says that. That's pretty effective. The guy who's been missing, who returns.
Yeah.
And, like, he's really messed up and beat up and doesn't talk about anything. And then he looks at it and he's like, it doesn't look that. It's more like a spider.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, and then that's creepy. And all that stuff with the thing is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And that's really effective. But again, it should have been half an hour. It should have been like an episode of Buffy or something, or Supernatural maybe, about this thing that collects people and then takes them and feeds on them for years in this just slightly out of phase dimension or whatever it is that's going on there.
Yeah, it's that, there's like enough that it leaves enough questions as well. Like, so some of the stuff kind of maybe doesn't make sense. Like, how does the husband keep appearing, or is that her conscience, like, playing tricks on her?
I imagine that was her guilt manifesting rather than him actually appearing.
That's where, like, most
there.
Of the scares were coming from. But sometimes it was just really funny.
Yeah, sometimes there was a shot of him, like, with his mouth open screaming, and it just looked
I would just hear my ma's voice, like, going, shut your mouth or you let the flies in.
Shut your mouth or you let the flies in. Oh, that's a great culty phrase, John. Yep. I like that.
I was just picturing something like that, you know, where just this guy, because he's not, like, they make him up to, like, look scarier, but he's not that intimidating.
Not really, no.
He would maybe make you jump if you turned around and you stand there, but then you just punch him and go, fuck off.
Yeah. You deck him and then be like, oh shit, sorry.
Fucking don't be standing behind me.
Yeah, so as a sort of film, I don't know, again, I really like the premise a lot.
Yeah.
But it just, again, I know we've said it again and again and again, but it's so long.
I mean, there are, like, obviously budgetary reasons as well, but again, that's why I think it would have worked as a short movie. I'm gonna keep hammering this home.
It's 97 minutes. Like, it's not like this is like a. It's not like it's a 2.5 hour. It's not like it's Apocalypse Now Redux or something. You know, it's just that the central premise is not enough to justify a movie of this length. And there's so much meandering and just people just having interpersonal dramas that just go on and on and on.
And they're vaguely connected to what the main crux of the story, which is annoying. You know, it's like I don't mind when, like, something like that happens and it goes off on a tangent with another character, if it makes sense or if it's going to have some kind of relevance, or even if the relevance is just like to get to know that character more. But it doesn't even, as I said earlier, just kind of reinforces. Oh yeah, she's Christian though. It's like, right, okay. Yeah. I was thinking, is this going to be like some, like, weird Christian message? Is she going to pray the spider creature away or something? And it doesn't like really come back. And you're going, why did it focus on that then?
Yeah, I know. It feels like irrelevant details to pad out. I think that's the thing. This movie is 70-80% padding.
Yeah.
It's a TV episode.
And it ruins the atmosphere that it actually builds up at once, because it doesn't really start with the kind of creepy atmosphere. Like, it builds at the start, and I was like, okay, this might, like, it actually intrigued me a bit, where I wasn't hooked, but I was like, this might get actually all right. I'll stick with it. And then at some point, probably around the time Doug Jones appears, you're like, okay, there's a bit of a creepy feeling, and then it goes on and on and on to the point where you're like, right, something happened, for fuck's sake.
The point where Doug Jones shows up is the point where you're expecting, oh, now we're getting going.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't.
Exactly.
And it comes to a screeching halt for the next, like, 30 to 40 minutes. Because, like, the next plot point is her husband coming back, and it doesn't happen for ages after that. You're sitting waiting for that to happen, or his body to show up or something, and it just goes on and on. Eventually that does happen, but you're just sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And you're like, oh, okay, right. And then when it's all said and done, you're like, I wish the end had come sooner, and I don't mean that in a, oh, I want it to be over. I just wish that, like, the end, the stuff that happened at the end should have happened a lot earlier.
Yeah.
To keep any kind of attention, and then maybe move on from there. But anyway, I think this film has a certain amount of... it is justified in a way, but again, it's not awful.
No.
It's just that...
Yeah, that, I had to keep... Like, I was saying that after. It was like, it's not the worst or anything. It's just...
No.
It just felt like it went on too long.
Yeah, and it's a good idea. It is a good idea.
Yeah.
I liked it. I like the creature, as it were, mm-hmm. and this as the central premise, but all the
guff around
it.
I like some good
it.
Shots as well, and some good, like, yeah. the moment where she's in the bathroom and... the door quickly shuts and the lights go out was effective. Yeah. Like, that was one of the times, like, oh, fuck, that was actually a pretty good, like, jump scare type
she,
thing.
Like, she falls down and scones herself on the, on the countertop. Yeah. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Yeah. So, yeah. Again, I think Mike Flanagan has done some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a guy who can make a good movie and make a good scary movie. I think this film has elements of that in it, and I think you can see that in it, like what you're saying there about, like, that scene's really effective, and some of the way it's shot's, like, quite nice.
Some
and
bit,
stuff like
that. I think he's a, for me anyway, I think he's a better director than he is writer. I have issues with his writing, but I mean, I don't know, that's just me. Everyone seems to absolutely love his stuff, so more power to him.
I just quite like some of his stuff.
Yeah.
I think he's done all right, and I am one of the people who kind of like Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, you have to have extreme views. You're not allowed.
I know.
These days, it's all, everything's binary. You have to have very, very, very strong views on everything.
Yeah, I kind of liked Dr. Sleep, sort of.
Yeah, at times, God, it was so bad.
At times, there were bits of it I kind of liked.
I liked moments of it. In a kind of, I don't think I'm meant to laugh at this bit, but it's so funny. Like when she's flying through the sky and stuff.
I thought
that was hilarious.
When Rose the Hat is flying through the sky. Yeah. This is the name of a character in a Stephen King novel. Oh. So anyway, Absentia. I'm going to say, to sum up our feelings on Absentia, it's sort of a... Shit. It's a shame, but... Well, John, do you want to... I've brewed a pot of coffee here. in the portal. Do you want some?
Why not? Portal coffee? Yeah.
I mean, it smells good. It smells like... It was just sort of... All the sort of component parts were just sort of floating around loose, you know? but I managed to gather them together and...
You had to grind the beans with your teeth?
I did. Yeah. But that's the way they do it in Italy, John. I've been assured.
Yep.
Yes, I was assured by a strange man in the street who wanted to sell me chewed up coffee that was how they did it in Italy. And I assume that he had no reason to lie to me.
Well, yeah.
So, John, I feel like I see in the very far distance, I feel as though I see the end of the portal. And I still feel quite unprepared.
Yeah.
For what's going to be waiting for us at the other end.
Yeah, I think we might have messed up. There's bound to be more movies about portals.
There's probably other movies about going through portals.
That would have been more informative.
I mean, technically, Event Horizon is a movie about going through a portal, although they don't go through a portal in the movie.
Yeah.
But they do see the consequences of what happened when it went through its own generated portal. that was not good, so I don't want to go there, John. I hope it's not there, but all we have is these three movies to glean from. But before we do that, before we try to extract the knowledge we need, John, which of these is the best movie?
Maybe the only one we liked.
The only one that we seemed to really like.
You know it's a bad week when Roland Emmerich wins.
When Roland Emmerich has the best film of the bunch. So Stargate is the best one of these three films. It holds up surprisingly well.
Yeah.
I will say that. I was surprised at how engaged I was with it.
Yeah. It's one of those ones that... you're kind of almost waiting for the moment it falls apart.
Yeah, and it never quite no. falls completely apart, does
it? It's just held together with spit and hope.
And gumption. Yeah. And just, like, blind faith that the science is real.
I think it's just, like... Because you can't really take it too seriously. So
no, it's
you
go impossible.
You go in kind of looking to switch your brain off and have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
The performances are better than the film deserves.
Yes.
And... Yeah, it's just daft, and at least it's like an adventure. It's like one of those yeah. you go into that portal and you come out, and it's like wow, and it's well shot, and it makes you feel like you're on an adventure.
Yeah,
that's all it needs to do.
It's a fun adventure movie, and it does that well. Its cast is the thing that makes it worthwhile. I feel like Roland Emmerich, when he made this, probably learned that.
Yeah,
and then tried to cast in that same style for his movies going forward, which is, I think the reason Jeff Goldblum is the science guy in Independence Day is because James Spader was the science guy in Stargate, and that worked. And it does kind of work.
And also, you need someone charismatic to be the, let's face it, very boring character of the Colonel or whatever you call him. Because it's Kurt Russell, you instantly go, well, Kurt Russell, he has charisma in abundance.
He
lends something to that character that
anyone
else would have been lacking, I think.
Yeah, and then you move on to, like, in Independence Day, you got Will Smith is filling that role. Yeah, I say what you want about Will Smith, he's a charismatic motherfucker.
Yeah.
All right. You know, he's very watchable.
I also love the fact that they kind of... There's a character who's very important in Stargate at the start, who they just kind of ditch, and that's the old lady. Yeah, the old lady who's, this is her whole project. Like, she is possibly the most important person. You don't really know how she has so much power that she has autonomy of this project and all this crap, until Kurt Russell comes. But she just gets ditched. It's like they just forget about her at the end. It's like, meh. So she gets her locket back, and that's about it.
Yeah, we assume. We assume she gets her locket back, John. They don't necessarily cover what happens when they go back to Earth, but I guess you got to watch the TV show to find out about that, don't you?
It sounds like you know something that I don't hear.
Well, because I watched the TV show.
Yep.
I unfortunately did watch an incredible amount of Stargate SG-1.
Kurt Russell goes through the gate and comes back as MacGyver.
Indeed, yes, he comes. He somehow transmogrifies into the MacGyver guy.
That's terrible. That is terrible. And
Daniel Jackson somehow transmogrifies into some guy that kind of looks like James Spader.
But I'm not going to get into this about to like get it all out. But he stays behind. But I'm sure
he does
contrive some reason.
They address that immediately at the very beginning of the first episode, where they just go get him.
Nice one.
And that's that. They just go get him, as far as I recall. It's been a long time since I saw the fucking pilot episode of Stargate SG-1. But I remembered watching it. I remember being kind of excited to see it.
Yeah.
And then watching a ludicrous amount of it when it was on. I think it was on... I can't remember if it was on... Was it on Channel 4? It might have been on BBC 2. It might have been that filled the Buffy slot, maybe, at some point, whenever Buffy was off.
That would probably make sense.
I think it filled the Buffy slot. It's very unfortunate warning there, but anyway, so Stargate is the best one of these movies because it's fun, it's an adventure, the special effects in it I think actually really really hold up. Absentia is technically okay, but the core concept at it isn't enough to fuel a whole movie. And even though it is only like, it's not even, it's 87 minutes. I said 97 before, it's 87. It's under 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It does still feel like too long.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, maybe it's unfair to, like, pit these movies against each other because the budgets in them, I haven't looked it up, but I'm sure they are
astronomically different. Yeah. I am sure.
But it's also, like, you know, I think we're fairly good at like taking movies for what they are, in the sense that like they're very different takes on something, and
I think
a massive budget would have helped.
I mean, whenever we watched Primer when we were doing time travel,
yeah,
Primer's like a micro-budget movie, and Primer was easily the best film.
Oh, yeah.
Primer was just... I'm extremely enamored of Primer.
Yeah.
I even managed to talk about Primer during this episode
again
already.
It comes down to the writing and the... Primer almost felt like it had too much to say, and they had to like edit it smartly to fit it all in.
Yeah.
Whereas Absentia, as we keep going over, was padded to the nth degree, where it was just like, oh my god, just wrap it up, or just something happened. Yeah. And it, as you mentioned, like it always felt too long. Like the beats of the story felt too spaced out.
Yeah.
And Parallel's just a piece of shit.
Parallel, again, I was gonna say we need to mention Parallel at least. Parallel is a piece of shit. Parallel has nothing to recommend it. Parallel is... I think the thing about Parallel, like the direction was just scattershot and nonsense and nonsensical in every way.
Like but there's no thought behind...
The writing is fucking terrible. It is just... Oh, I mean, I hate to be the angry internet guy. I really do hate to be that guy.
Oh, don't worry, there's plenty of them.
I know, which is the problem.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Parallel, like nobody, there's nobody involved creatively in this that I can point out and say that person was doing all right.
No.
No, the writing in it is just awful. Like, they didn't have a good enough idea to sit down and write a film. They just didn't,
and even the log line is misleading, and in the sense that it says, like, you know, the consequences are because of their actions.
It's not really.
It, as you mentioned, everything happens at the very end. Like there are no consequences for the likes of like him spending the money off his mirror self. You know, it's just shit just happens, and you're just meant to accept it. It's a kind of like. The idea would maybe make a good TV series in the style of like a Sliders type thing, you know. But you would have to make a lot of changes, and you would have to make it make sense. And I don't know. It always comes back to me. Like I felt that all the rules that they put in place felt more like conveniences for the story than this will make it more interesting. It was like, this will explain how they can make their app work in less time. This will explain...
Which is the most boring premise of, oh no, we have to get our parking app finished by Thursday. Mm. Who cares?
Yeah.
And they have this rivalry with this other developer guy, and you're like, these are the most uninteresting characters with the most uninteresting motivations. It's just dull. It's dull as ditch water conceptually.
Yeah,
all of that stuff, and then they try to make it dramatic, and it's so bad. And again, it feels like a series. It feels like a series of unconnected sketches with no punchline. And then they have one special effect that was good. And again, that's it. That's the whole film. So, John, Stargate is definitely the best film.
Yep.
Again, I think I've justified I do kind of like some things about Mike Flanagan and things that he's done.
Yeah.
But Roland Emmerich did have a huge amount of money in his pocket to throw at Stargate, but I think he spent it wisely.
Yeah.
And I will watch anything with James Spader in it. I won't necessarily watch anything with Kurt Russell in it.
Because I think we're both firm believers that like it doesn't matter how much money you have. Like if you throw all the money you have at a piece of shit, it's still going to be a piece of shit. It's just going to be a more expensive piece of shit.
Yeah, but there is something inherently cool about the concept of Space Egypt. I think Space Egypt's cool. That big, stupid, pyramid-shaped spaceship, I think, looks class.
Yeah.
It's really cool when it comes down and like docks on top of a pyramid.
Yeah.
And that's daft as fuck, but it looks cool and it's kind of scary. And that's something that Roland Emmerich always kind of did well, is this sense of intimidating scale.
Yeah.
I always felt that the first time I went to see Independence Day in the cinema, it was like a real experience. I'd never seen anything quite like that before. There's all those shots of just like these... huge. There's the one particular shot of the huge ship over Manhattan.
Yeah.
That when you're in a cinema and you're looking at that and you're hearing the sort of the is really intimidating. He's actually really good at that.
Oh yeah.
He's really, really good at that. It's just that
it's when just it everything
comes
else.
When it comes to narrative, he's a butterfingers, you know. Yeah. It's slipping and sliding all over the place, and but he has these just couple of little linchpins that are always there to keep it in place with the science guy and the angry guy, and maybe unnecessary family drama. Now the unnecessary family drama in this is kept to the bare minimum.
Yeah,
that gets out of control in Roland Emmerich's later movies. In this, it's just Kurt Russell has a bit of a sad thing, an extremely sad thing that happens.
She gets
to him
over by the end by shooting lots of people.
He does. He gets over it by murdering people, which is
which is the American way,
indeed. But this movie has the barest minimum of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's always the stuff that mostly drags his movies down, outside of the nonsense factor.
Yeah.
Is the people having family dramas in the middle, like unlikely family dramas in the middle of this crazy chaos, like in friggin' The Day After Tomorrow. And you're like, what? Are they really still arguing about this shit while there's a geostorm or whatever coming that's going to freeze the whole world? And like, yeah, dad. Yeah. You're like, just what?
While the literal cold is chasing them.
Yeah, while the cold is chasing them down corridors. Yep. Like the
sentient,
a slasher.
The sentient cold.
The sentient cold that chases after people.
Oh,
that movie was still kind of entertaining, though. Yeah. I mean, it is still funny to think back on it. But anyway, Stargate is... I don't want to say Stargate's great, but Stargate's actually quite good.
Yeah.
Stargate's quite good. So we'll leave it at that. So, John, which of these films prepares us for being vomited out into somewhere else through a portal?
I mean... I don't know. There's... Parallel and Stargate are fairly similar in how their portals work. The Absentia one, you know, you just get caught by the spider creature, which I really do not like the idea of.
That's not good.
So, I don't want to be dragged into that portal. That you don't seem to have any control in that one.
No.
Whereas in Stargate, you have to, like, you know, solve the puzzle.
Yeah,
once
you get to the other side, you have to then figure out. It's like it's got video game logic there. Of like, you have to go around and find the tablets, and then you have to then come back and insert them in the thing one at a time, and then you can get back again.
In the words of Sean O'Casey, "What is the stars?
What is they?
What is they?
Indeed,
you have to work that out." And,
indeed, Juno and the Peacock quote. I bet you get a lot of Juno and the Peacock quotes in podcasts.
Oh, definitely.
I was standing on the bow of a ship, and I looked up and I thought to myself,
"What is the stars?
What is the stars?"
Well, James Spader knows exactly what the stars
are. James Spader has discovered.
So
he's been out there through his fancy gate.
And I mean, I would kind of like to lean more towards the parallel one, because all you have to do is like turn the mirror a wee bit.
Yeah.
Like just move the mirror, and then that's it. You just go through again.
Yeah, and you just noop back through, but we don't know. I'm going to err on the side of Stargate. not just because Parallel was visual diarrhea, but because Stargate, again, I think it's mainly, it's that classic Roland Emmerich of, we're going to do something dumb that makes you feel like you're smart.
Yeah.
Because you understand it.
Because let's face it, like, those other scientists would have thought of the stars before, like, in the 3 years. What were they doing for 3 years?
They were writing whatever it was they were writing on that whiteboard.
Lazy bumps
and then
of
nothing
bastards.
Else. Yeah, nothing else.
I'm pretty good at, like, word puzzles, so I think I'll be pretty grand.
I think you'd be grand. You'd be good at. Did you ever play the Stargate game?
No.
It was on the Game Boy. It was like a mix. See, that's the thing. I thought, oh, cool, it'd be like a fun action game, and then I played it. And it was a friend of ours had it, and I remember playing it on his Game Boy and just being like, what is this? It's like top-down Tetris. It's like all the little symbols from the gate are falling down in little blocks in like a circle, like that you're looking down on from above, and you have to like stack them to like match them, I think, sort of like columns. Brilliant. I never really understood what the rules were because I never read the instruction manual. So I think it's one of those games where you had to read the instruction manual to know what the fuck was happening.
So you're going to have to be the angry military guy then. You're going to have to be that architect. You're going to have to lean into that. I'll be the scientist dude. Then.
You be the science. You be the nerdy science guy that uses really inappropriate metaphors to explain huge concepts that then reduces the huge concepts down to something simple.
Yep.
And therefore it all just works. And I'll be the guy that shouts at the natives and shoots a gun in the air, I guess. We didn't bring any guns, so I'll just make gun movements with my fingers.
Don't worry, they're primitive. They'll fall in line.
I'll impress them with my smartphone and they'll get scared, and then I'll intimidate them that way, John. Good stuff, all right? If we ever get to the end of this friggin' portal, who knows? I don't know if we ever will. We probably won't. I'm going to say we're not going to get out of this portal, John, for another 2 weeks.
Ooh.
I think it's going to be 2 weeks before we get vomited out of this portal again.
Okay, Mr. Scientist.
I know. Mr. Scientist. No, that's you. Shut up. You're supposed to say, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Goddamn idiots. Look, it's like putting too much air in a balloon.
Yeah, you have to listen to me. We don't have much time.
Yeah, you could do the old, the analogy that they used for Interstellar and Event Horizon. You're going to get your piece of paper and your pencil and fold it over and push it through. You'd be like, the 2 points become 1 point and then portals. Good stuff. Thank you, John, for your great science guy explanations. So we are on Twitter. We are at 7 Day Apocalypse. That's at numeral 7 Day Apocalypse. You can email us on filmcast at thisweeksapocalypse.com. Mm-hmm. That's filmcast at thisweeksapocalypse.com. We are currently doing sort of a playthrough kind of thing of Discworld 2.
Yeah.
On the old YouTubes, on our YouTube channel, This Week's Apocalypse, funnily enough. So you can join us there. And I guess we're just going to continue to hurtle through this portal.
Awesome.
I guess we could do the old Bill and Ted again. You just got to talk about Bill and Ted at every opportunity. 20 questions. Am I an animal, mineral, or a vegetable?
Ooh, animal.
Yes.
Ooh, are you a cat?
Yes.
Oh.
Yay! Well done. Brilliant, John. You're the best at this. Okay. This is definitely the way to get through this. Okay. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.